My name's Harper. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, I'm Harper.
My sponsor just taught me to trust God and not prepare for these things. So we're just going to trust God and see how it goes. Hey, Jay. Coming to Alcoholics Anonymous was definitely the last thing on my list of life accomplishments that I wished for. I mean, who knew that the greatest accomplishment of my life was probably to get so twisted that I had to end up, you know, hanging out with other alcoholics, asking a man to help me navigate life, and using this little book right here to help me make decisions and guide me through everything that comes up. You know, I didn't know. In some ways, it's so simple. You know, I had no idea that there was a book that I could really use to guide my life. And you know, I started drinking. I guess it was an omen. When I was young, my dad offered me and my two sisters, if we didn't drink before our 21st birthday, he would give us $1,000. I didn't really know what that meant at the time, you know, but I didn't drink the first couple times I had the opportunity to. I waited till I was like 13, you know. I mean, I'll never forget the first time, you know. It was after my parents went to bed. I had a friend spending the night. We had a hot Bud Light. He put a bag on his head, and I thought it was the funniest thing I'd ever seen in my whole entire life, you know. And it was that, I guess, that sense of ease and comfort that I'd always been looking for. I didn't know that, you know. I didn't realize how uncomfortable I was in my own skin until I felt that, and that felt like that was better than the way I felt. So I didn't get the $1,000. I drank a lot, you know, and I drank like you did, and probably like you did, and probably like most of us did, you know. And I did a whole lot more than drink. You know, and going up through high school, I mean, because I was drinking, I ended up with my first felony charge trying to break into a house when I was 16 years old, and I got caught. And so my parents came to the natural conclusion that it was probably the people that I was hanging out with, you know, and so they switched me to a new high school. I got a tour of Virginia's military schools, which was neat. That's not where I ended up. Because I told them in the interview I would walk out, you know, if I showed up there. But I ended up at a new high school, and I found my people like I always did, you know. My old high school, I was a skater, you know. Like, I guess I always felt like I fit on the fringe of society, you know. And so at the new school, I was introduced to a more psychedelic lifestyle, you know. So the skating kind of went to the wayside, and you know, Grateful Dead and Fish and partying even harder with more high quality ways of catching a bus showed up in my life. And I went to college, and I'm not sure what they do at college, but I know what I did at college. It was party hard, you know. And I got my second felony, and I got asked to leave college, and I had to come home, move back in with my parents. That was a tough move. I don't know if you ever moved back in with your parents. I bet most of you probably have actually moved back in with your parents. But that sucks. They got me a job at Windsor Tree Service thinking they would teach me a lesson. But so I went, you know, then I went like real low, and I tried some things I didn't think I was ever going to try. But you know, whenever I'll do my best to keep my language clean, but it's not where I shine. But you know, like on a rainy day, hanging out in the trailer, drinking natural ice, and other ways of catching a buzz come up, you know, I won't get too far into it, but like apparently me catching a buzz knows no limits. You know, I might think I have some like moral boundary in all sorts of areas, but you present me with the opportunity to cross that boundary, and I am down. If I don't think anybody's going to find out, you know what I mean, in particular. That didn't really work out that great for me. You know what I mean? I was first introduced to a 12-step program when I was like 24. And I'll try not to go down too much of a rabbit hole. I know people have all sorts of various opinions on just keeping things alcohol, but that's not totally my story. But I went to a few NA meetings. I stopped smoking crack, and I thought we were good. So, like, Jack Daniels was fine, just as long as I wasn't, you know, buying those kinds of things and doing it. Because I was a father at this point, you know what I mean? And my wife was not cool with her husband smoking crack, so I had to put that to the wayside. I work in restaurants. I still work in restaurants. And we party, you know? We come to work late. It's kind of like a neat routine where you can wake up hungover, and then you can be hungover till you get to work, and then you can start drinking water out of a cork container. And you get, you know, 3, 4, 5 of those down, and then things start winding down, and usually the kind of place I like to work, somebody will offer you a beer as you get close to being finished cleaning up, and you know, you feel like $1 million all over again. And I did that for a lot of years. I don't know. I thought as these things happened, like I ran into all sorts of trouble, and my friends changed over and over over the course of time. And I still somehow managed to, like, my career continued to progress as my partying progressed. It does kind of make sense now, because I know that there was a greater plan going on. But I was taking the credit for doing all this stuff as it unfolded, you know. And eventually I was given the opportunity to open my own restaurant. And that was pretty cool, right? Because I'm really proud of myself at this point. And I like to think of myself now as, like, you know, one of the largest booze collections in the city of Suffolk, you know, because I own all this whiskey, and I own all this wine, and I own all this beer. And I really think in a lot of ways that I've really made it, because I don't have to ask anybody if I can have it. You know what I mean? And it was interesting. Let's say that. But you know, I still did that thing where I would wake up, I'd be hungover, and I would drink 4 or 5 quarts of water in those like plastic soup containers. You know, that's what we drink out of in the kitchen. And then it would be like, as we got towards the end of the service, it's time for a cocktail, you know? And then as time went on, time for a cocktail got a little bit earlier. And then, like, I guess I was talking about those kind of moral limits or whatever. It was like, for this, it was what time it was cool to have my first bourbon, you know? It used to be after service, and then my pompous ass would walk off of the line in the kitchen and y'all could clean up for me, you know? And then it moved to like 8 o'clock, and then I'm gonna go do this or that, you know, and y'all can clean up for me. And then 7, then eventually, like, I'm not capable of really working that hard anymore. And then it moves to like 6 and 5, and you know, eventually it turns into that, you know, thing where it's like starting earlier and earlier, and I'm finding excuses to go out to lunch with a friend, or, you know, it's Taco Tuesday. I'm just gonna have a Corona with my lunch before I go to work. And then I got where, you know, my life was getting real, real hard. I was really unhappy. I was miserable, you know, and I'd spend a lot of time by myself, drinking and really disturbed. I could not figure out what was going on in my life. I had all these problems, you know. As it got worse, I couldn't sleep, you know, and I went to the doctor and trying to figure out what was wrong with me. I mean, I didn't really tell him that much. I just told him I couldn't sleep that well. And so, you know, he gave me a prescription to Xanax. And I mean, remember I was telling you about this thing right here? You know, like, it tells us that you know, we might end up with some sedatives. And then that worked for a little while, but I kept waking up in the middle of the night. And somewhere along the way, I realized when I woke up, I guess it was the pressure of, like, I had things piling up, bills, paperwork. I was never even close to caught up, and it was a really heavy weight to carry. And so I would wake up in the middle of the night, and I thought I was worried about that stuff, so I was going to go get called up on it, you know. So naturally, I went to the place where all that booze I was talking about was, and it was like a robot. I would walk in the door, go straight to the bar, fix a cocktail, and then proceed to just not get any of that work done. But I was all by myself. The doors were locked. I had a camera, you know, at the other door, so if somebody was coming in, like, I was going to see you coming. And it was some dark times by myself. I'm glad the cameras weren't pointed the other way. And so, you know, I would go home. I would slither into bed at like 6 o'clock or something. Sometimes maybe sleep for a half hour, and sometimes just pretend like I was sleeping for 5 minutes, and then the alarm would go off and I would act like I'd been asleep, you know, and take the kids to school. I don't know if you ever took your kids to school drunk. That's how I like to get down. You know, and at this point I knew it was out of control. I didn't really know it was out of control until it was all the way out of control, you know. And then there's that question of, like, how did I get here? Because I certainly didn't mean for it to happen, because I'm a pretty good guy, you know. But it was out of control, you know what I mean? I remember two things, like, I can see them in my mind's eye. One was getting out of the shower. I don't know if it was 100 times or one time or whatever, but I remember looking in the mirror and just tears coming down my face, and I'm saying, what the fuck is wrong with you? You know, I have beautiful children, I have a business, I have something I'm pretty good at that I can make a living from, but I was so miserable and I couldn't stop drinking. And I remember driving home from Virginia Beach from the Restaurant Depot, which I'll go there on Tuesday mornings and get supplies, you know. And I don't know how you get to Virginia Beach, but I like to fix a pint glass full of ice and vodka for the ride there, and then a pint glass full of ice and vodka for the ride home. But something happened every time, you know, because the pint would only get me halfway to Virginia Beach. So luckily I had the backup, and so I'd drink 2 pints of icy vodka on the way to Virginia Beach, and then I'd, you know, get some of the stuff that was on the list and not care about whatever, you know, too lazy to walk or whatever. And then I'd stop at that 7-Eleven on Newtown, and then I started drinking weird stuff. I don't know if any of you drank weird stuff towards the end, but, you know, it's like, I didn't, you know, like a Budweiser at 9 or 10 in the morning felt more savage than like a orange flavored something. You know, I have rules, and, you know. I was coming back. My business is in downtown Suffolk, and I remember sitting at the stoplight of Constance and Penner, and just more of those tears rolling down my face. And I was like, I gotta stop drinking, you know. But I knew if I stopped drinking, that meant that was a permanent thing. That wasn't a temporary thing. And I couldn't imagine life without drinking. But I couldn't imagine drinking anymore. You know, and like all this stuff was covered, but I didn't know all this stuff was already written about and told about. And I thought I was the only person that ever felt like that. So eventually I end up, I'd been to a marriage counselor, I'd been to a psychologist, I'd been to a therapist, I'd been to all sorts of stuff, you know what I mean? Like, really, I was trying to find the answer. I really was. Anything but Alcoholics Anonymous for me. I ended up walking into a hospital because I couldn't stop drinking, you know. And that was That was in December of 2019. And I quit drinking. I went to therapy twice a week. I went, came to a few AA meetings, but I didn't like them. Y'all talked about God too much. I thought y'all were, it was me the whole time, but I thought it was y'all. And so then COVID happens, right? So I quit drinking in December of 2019, and then COVID happens. I'm like, cool. It's like, oh my God. Because I thought all this was happening to me. I didn't even realize that all y'all were going through COVID too. And so my life fell apart again. I didn't drink, but I got worse, if that's possible. And I ended up getting shipped off to a place called Edge Hill Recovery Center, which is in Winchester, Virginia. And so at this point, I'm in total psychosis. I've lost pretty much all my friends. Everybody I work with is disgusted with me. My wife and I are terrible. You know, however bad it was for you, that's how bad it was for me too. Or you probably wouldn't be here, you know. And I was given a big book, you know, and I was telling, was it Ryan? Outside. He was telling me about his magical coincidences of his rehab experience. And, you know, I open up Bill's story and it says, and there I was at Winchester Cathedral. And I'm like, what the hell's going on? You know, and then I kept finding these heads up quarters everywhere. I'm like, what's up with the quarters? And they're like, what do you mean the quarters? Like they're everywhere and they're all heads up. They're like, I don't know, man. And I'm really crazy at this point, but I'm genuinely finding quarters heads up. And then somebody's like, do you know that George Washington's Revolutionary War headquarters is right across the street? And I'm like, that checks out, because George Washington's on all these quarters I keep finding, you know? And then I have to go, this is not like a fancy type of rehab. This is like a, like kind of feet in the dirt spiritual approach to recovery. If you ever know anybody that needs rehab, I recommend it. Anyways, my experience there was good. I don't have any recommendations. But then I don't know, all these things keep happening. You know what I mean? And I'm not the brightest dude that you'll ever meet. I'm nowhere close to, I'm not bright at all, really. And so it took me a while, but all these things kept happening. And I'm like, all right, something's going on. This is bigger than coincidence. And it kept happening really, really intensely. And I didn't know what was going on, but I knew it was something bigger than me. And I just kept reading in this thing, you know? And so I'm like, psychotic, nobody wants to talk to me, nobody wants to be around me. Like when I walk into a room and start talking to people, like they slowly kind of break up and go into other rooms. And I'm like still feeling really lonely and not okay, but I keep reading this thing. And it's like, oh my God, this is me, you know? And, you know, then the next chapter, I remember opening that and it says, there is a solution. And I mean, they were like the most beautiful words that I ever read in my life, because I was so far from okay. I was ready to kill myself. I was ready to die. You know, I didn't care anymore. And I have these beautiful children and I have this wife that's put up with all this stuff. And, you know, I get to be my own boss at work. And I just think that I've got, I'm, you know, like I said, I don't mean to talk too much about the hopeless, terrible misery, but I think it's really important because that's what got me here. And I think it's probably, none of us came to check this out tonight, I don't think, because it was like, not having a great Friday, I guess I'll go see what they're doing. I mean, it gets really, really terrible, you know? And so after this, like all these powerful coincidences, and I'm like, this is magic, this is incredible. Obviously, Alcoholics Anonymous has all this figured out already. Like, I'm all in. Like, I was in all the way. So the people at the rehab place, they were idiots, because I know what I need now. And so I left, you know, like 8 days in. And they're like, this is not a good idea, Harper. I'm like, no, you don't understand. Like, I got it. I'm good. And so I rented a car and I drove home. And I had, all right, part of the truth is that I had concert tickets to go see Fish in Colorado and airplane tickets for that same day. And it told me in this book that not to hold off on telling people, telling the person that I trusted about these, you know, faults. And because I could put this thing, I could put anything to my benefit, you know what I mean? And so when I read this by myself and it tells me to go find somebody that I trust and tell them the stuff from my life, and I'm like, well, that's my little sister. And she's in Colorado where the fish show is, you know? So I'm just going to zip on out to Colorado. I'm going to get all this stuff off my chest. At this point, I don't care because I've gone to rehab and I've been so miserable. I don't care who knows what about me, you know? And so I told my wife that I think rehab might have called my wife too. I was like, I'm coming home. Or no, I'm not coming home. I'm going to Colorado. She's like, will you please come home and just like give me a hug before you go? I'm like, I'll give you a hug when I get back. Like, I got to do this. And she convinced me that she really needed to see me before I left for Colorado. And I figured, I don't know, I'd probably kind of maybe upset things a little bit at the house, you know, with the whole week away in rehab, you know. And I didn't even get into what, you know, there was stuff that happened that made, like, now's time to go to rehab, but we won't get into all that. I mean, I will. If you want to know, just ask me, and we'll do that in a more private setting. So I was going to run home, you know, and see my wife and, you know, tell my kids I loved them or whatever, but I needed to get to Colorado. So I got home, and my sister from Colorado was there, and I was like, what the hell's going on here? You know, and then my parents, it's like they're like popping out of the trees and stuff. They're having this like, I don't know, I guess an intervention. I'm like, y'all are doing this wrong. I've already been through that. You know? And so anyways, like, you know, like everybody's distraught, you know. And but I'm fine because I found the answer. I'm good now. I was like so far from good. And I forgot to mention, like, on my way home in that rental car, it's supposed to be like 4 hours or something. It took me like 7.5 because I got lost. And, you know, I mean, I have an iPhone. Like, I was not okay. And so anyways, you know, I'm like, well, let me see the kids before I go to Colorado. And they're like, you know, the kids aren't here. And I'm like, what do you mean the kids aren't here? Like, this is home. And they're like, yeah, you can't see the kids. And so now it's like, I thought I had things figured out, you know, but then my sister that I'm going to talk to from Colorado is home and I can't see my kids. And I'm like, you know, this is like extreme level of humility, that I've never, been in a situation. Like, I don't like not being in charge, you know what I mean? And, so I go in the house, you know, my family's there and I have these gun cabinets in my living room, and my guns are gone. And I'm like, you know, like, what kind of guy do you think I am? You know, so now I'm like, I'm really offended at this situation. Can't see my kids, my guns are gone. They think I need to go back to rehab. Like, my world is upside down. And I say, fine, I'll go to rehab. So I end up going to a second rehab up in Pennsylvania called Karen Treatment Center, and they found one with like brain scans and all this stuff. I'm like, no, I don't need all that mess. Spiritual is the way. And it is, but not like I was doing it. And so, you know, I get to Pennsylvania, and I start settling down. And on the ride up, there was a guy who was a friend of mine, and he was sober, and he was in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he had told me that he was in Alcoholics Anonymous, but he never told me that I should be in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, he just had this peace about him, you know, and he told me enough stuff about, like, you know, when he got drunk, he used to do things like take his kid to the Coke man's house and He threw his kid down the stairs one time, and he didn't act like that anymore. And he was sober, and he was happy. And I liked the man, and I respected the man, you know. So on my ride up, I called him, and I was like, "Hey, man, this is what's going on in my life, and I'm on my way to Pennsylvania. And I know you live in Richmond, and I live in Suffolk, but like, I need a sponsor. I realize that Alcoholics Anonymous is the way. Can you like help me out temporarily until I get back to Suffolk and figure out what I'm gonna do?" And he's like, "Yeah, you know, call me when you get to Pennsylvania." And for whatever reason, my family, like, one of my demands for the next rehab was that I could have my phone. So like, I was in a rehab where I could have my phone, and probably not the smartest idea on their part, but anyways, I got to rehab. I started doing the rehab thing, and I was like finally to the place that I was pretty much willing to do whatever it took to get sober and to work the steps and just take this man's suggestions, you know, because he had helped me realize that my ideas were my problem, and I was licked. I was done. I didn't care if I ever caught another buzz. That was a big deal for a dude like me, because I really like catching a buzz. And I called him every night, and I sat in a little hammock, and I wore a little headlamp, and we started on this page right here, and then we went to the next page, and we worked our way through the big book, and we did what the big book said to do, and he read it to me, you know, and I suggested maybe like he read a page and I read a page, something like that. Because I like being in charge of shit, you know? And that's not how it went, you know? He read to me like I was a little boy, you know? And that's what I do with guys that ask me to help. I don't know what everybody else does, but I did what worked for me, you know? And it's not a little boy, just I felt like the little boy. He wasn't treating me like a little boy. I felt like a little boy because I had a lot of issues, you know? And as we worked through and we read it, we talked about what we read, and these coincidences kept happening to me, and I came to realize that like there's more going on than I was ever aware of, and I started to slow down a little bit, you know. And so while I was at this place in Pennsylvania, I started to do the best that I could at all the sessions and classes and things that I had to go to. I stopped being such a know-it-all. The best I could figure out how to be, you know, and I started trying to get there a few minutes early to like show a little respect to these people that were dedicating their lives to trying to help people who are in rehab. And I like stopped trying to teach the class and started listening and participating a little bit more, you know. And every morning there they had a voluntary meditation thing. And I started going to that very early in my process there. And I think we had to be there I think breakfast was maybe at like 7:15 or 7:30. And that was at like 6:45. So now I'm like, for the first time in my life, probably getting up earlier than I have to. And I'm showing up, you know, and I'm getting shown, not really taught, just getting shown how to sit still for like 10 minutes or 15 minutes to start my day. I had no routine at all. I mean, I like wake up, check my phone, look at money, like think about my problems. That's how it always woken up. You know what I mean? Of course, you know what I mean. I don't even know where this stuff came from. It was like, it just started happening in my life. Like I would wake up and I would jump out of bed at rehab, and then I would say, "Slow down, buddy." And I'd get back in bed, and I'd put the sheets back on, and I'd wiggle my toes, and I'd wiggle my fingers, and I'd feel the sheets on my body, which I don't know if I'd ever felt the sheets on my body. You know, it was like, this dude was always talking. It was always going hard. So, like, for the first time in my life, I was, I guess, ready to slow down and get better. I think probably every day I had to jump back in bed, like, wiggle my toes, and then I would get up and just slow it down a little bit. And I would go to this meditation thing, and it was guided, and it's a huge part of my recovery still today. I meditate every day. eventually it was almost time to come home, and they said, you know, we suggest everybody go to sober living. And I'm like, well, I'm not everybody, you know. And but I knew, you know, from reading the book, and I did the third step prayer one night, you know, beside my hammock, on the phone with my sponsor, you know, out of the book. And I had like just started to work the fourth step when it was time for me to go home, and it was the day before I left, and I was starting to realize that like surrender was the ticket, you know, like I'm not the ticket. Life will show me the tickets over and over and over again if I just get out of the way. And this is a very, very new way of living life for me. So the day before I left, I said, you know what? Fine. This is still how I behave, right? You find me somewhere to go that's like within a budget that I give you. I'm not going to one of the shitty ones, and I'm not going to one of the super expensive ones in like Colorado or New York City or something, you know? I'm going close to home where I can see my family. And they found that for me. And I called the dude who owned it. And I mean, this is like, rehab's one thing, but now I'm going back into the real world, and I'm gonna live in Williamsburg because I can't like go home because I'm not like safe or sound, or, and I haven't been to work in like 10 weeks or something, and I'm just like, shit, what have I done, you know? But I was willing to do whatever it took, you know? And so I rented another car, you know? And I drove straight to Richmond, and I went and saw this man who was my new sponsor, and, you know, we just sat down and went over the step work I had so far, and he showed me how I'd not really done it right at all. And we just went back to the book over and over and over again. And then I went to my new house in Williamsburg, met that dude right there at my sober house in Williamsburg. And my life was upside down, you know, but I was sober. And my sponsor kept saying, you know, if you're sober, you got a shot. You know, he kept reminding me, like, you don't have life licked now that you're sober and like seeing this spiritual magic like that you were not done. You know what I mean? Now you got a shot. And I kept getting up every morning and meditating. And that slowly turned into some reading. I had some time on my hands. I was at a sober house with no kids and I didn't go to work, you know? But slowly, you know, from starting my morning by getting up earlier than I had to, and first thing I did was read the daily reflection. Then I'd meditate, and over time that's turned into a few other readings and things. And I mean, to this day, I wake up at 5:30 in the morning, and like when my daughter's in school, I wake her up at 6:45, so I have an hour and 15 minutes of reading, slow coffee drinking, lots of cigarettes, 15 minutes of meditation, praying from my knees, and then starting my day. And I would get up early, and I would go show up at the house before it was time to go to school, and I would, like, eventually I was able to take my daughter to school and see my kids, and it was really weird. It was really weird for my kids to feel so scared of me, but slowly, very, very slowly, things got better. And as I'm living at this house in Williamsburg, you know, like things are still not so hot with me and my wife. But I realize, you know, like if I let go and I let God, like, I don't know what the path is, but I know it's going to be okay. I'd never felt like it was going to be okay. And I was actually like in the worst predicament that I'd ever been in, but I had the most comfort and peace inside that things were going to be okay. I didn't know what okay looked like, but, you know, so I'm like, you know, great, I'm going to live in Williamsburg for the rest of my life with a bunch of dudes. And then I read at some point in the big book, I think it's in The Family Afterwards, or maybe it's To Wives, and it says, you know, if you're separated, when it's time to get together, it will be abundantly clear sounds like a bunch of bullshit. But I came home to the sober house one day and they're like, hey, Hart, 2 weeks. We're switching some things out. You got to be gone. And I was like, that's abundantly clear. You know? And so I moved home, you know. And slowly but surely, like normalcy creep back into our life. At work, I mean, I really, really ruined work, like bad. And it was, I mean, I learned somewhere along the way that we can be humble or be humiliated. And I took the humiliated path in like every area of my life. It was really, but I mean, it beat me into submission to realize that doing my best to be humble is definitely the best path for me. And, you know, since then, I've worked the steps. I've fixed what I can so far. Some of the stuff, I don't know how y'all behave, but I got some stuff that is not fixable. And so that stuff used to make me really uncomfortable. But now I realize that it's something that I get to use to help other dudes that think they've done the worst stuff ever. Things that, you know, I know y'all are here, but you haven't done stuff like this. And then I got a pocket full of them to make you feel okay. You know, other spiritual teachings have come to me through, you know, some other, because, like, we don't have a monopoly on this thing, you know? That's what the book tells me, and I didn't realize it at first, but there are other people out there that are looking for this spiritual growth and this, like, immense peace on the inside, which can come from spiritual living and spiritual practices and spiritual effort, really, I guess, is what it came down to for me, of how to let go of everything and let it happen, you know? But other people, like, are on this journey with us, you know what I mean? They may not have drank themselves to the, like, centimeter within death, but they were in just as much pain or whatever. It seems like pain is the touchstone of spiritual awakening, from what I've gathered. And I don't know, I'm not going to act like I know a lot about spiritual things, because I just know what's worked for me. I ain't never been you. Like, as life progresses, I got the same job, I got the same wife, same kids, same house, same truck, pretty much the same amount of money, same body, you know, like, same clothes in my drawers. I listen to the same music, I go to the same concerts. And my life is as different as it could possibly be, you know? It's all because of, you know, because of y'all and this book. And, yeah, so, you know, if you're a couple days without a drink, or if you're wondering if Alcoholics Anonymous is, like, the way to get sober, or if you're special, you know, and nobody would understand how hard it's been for you, if you've done some secretive stuff, stuff's been done to you, if you're a freak, you know, you like hanging out thinking about killing yourself, any of that stuff, you know, like, this program showed me the way out, you know. If it worked for me, it might work for y'all too, you know. And I know there's a lot of people in here, I mean, you know, like, the things I've said tonight might sound like a bunch of horse shit to you, and that's cool, because it might be for you, but there's probably somebody who has a story that's, like, maybe more aligned with what would be helpful to you here. My day's never gotten worse from coming to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. I've heard some really cool stuff said at these meetings. I've heard some really stupid stuff said at these meetings. But I've also made some killer friends. I've helped some people in ways that made my life better, just from like giving away what was given to me, you know, on I didn't know that, like, if another man knew everything about me, I really didn't think that, you know, and then come to find out there's a dude that I was willing to share everything about me, the way I thought, the way I behaved, what my motives were way back when for, like, you know, breaking into a house at 16 years old and, you know, all these things that I've been carrying in here that really, I didn't know the damage they'd done. I didn't even know they were in there. You know what I mean? But they were damn sure blocking the sunlight of the spirit. And I didn't know anything about the sunlight of the spirit, you know? But I don't know. It's the coolest thing that's ever happened to me. I went from, like, as far over here of thinking Alcoholics Anonymous was the stupidest thing I'd ever heard of to it showed me how to live my life. And, you know, so, yeah, that's what I got to say tonight. But I love y'all. Thank y'all for inviting me to talk about me for an hour or whatever it was.
Thanks, Harper.